Excuse me, I still have a cold from last week. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to all. My name is Debbie, and I am an alcoholic. Our fifth tradition states that our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Valley Group honors this tradition by rigorously searching for the finest recovery seekers in the Western Hemisphere so that they can share their experience, strength, and hope with us. Each week, we recognize one of these speakers for their service to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is now time to recognize Valley Group's Outstanding Speaker of the Week. Our nominee for this category has a Friday date of July 5th, 2009. He has been continually in service as Secretary of Big Book Study, Bylaws Chairperson, Graphics Chairperson, Website Chairperson, and Outreach Chairperson, right? Yeah. As well as being a sponsor. And his favorite AA motto is, let go and let God. So now, may I have the envelope, please? Woohoo! All right, you guys, I know you've been waiting all day to find out who the winner is. The winner of the Outstanding Speaker of the Week award is Bobby Y. from Fresno, California. Thank you for letting me do that.
Hi, my name is Bobby. I'm a grateful real alcoholic. This was unexpected, but I wouldn't.
Thank you.
I don't know about the greatest in the Western Hemisphere, maybe just the greatest in California, so I'll do my best to keep you entertained. I would like to thank the Valley Group for asking me to come out here and share my experience, strength, and hope. And like they said, my sobriety date is 7/5/2009. My home group is the Kingsburg Big Book Study, Sunday night, 7 o'clock, out there in Kingsburg Fellowship. So I guess I would like to also say thank you for giving me a stage. It makes me feel very, very important and fun here. I'd like to start in the beginning, you know, when I was in the womb. My mom says that I would always push at like her belly, like just a little bit, like not kick her, but just kind of push like it wasn't enough. And my other two brothers didn't do that. And that's what my whole drinking was like. It was just never quite enough, or anything for that matter. So if I was at school and I got, you know, all A's and A minus, I was pissed. It just wasn't enough. If I was at work and I got a $1.25 raise and it was the biggest raise they'd ever given in the company, I was pissed because it just wasn't enough. You know, I wanted 150, right? If I was dating a girl and she had C's, I wanted D's because it just wasn't enough. Yeah, there we go. Finally, I got something out of you guys. All right. Boobies. That's what does it. Okay. You never have enough. And it was all last in the beginning for me. Drinking was fun. I loved it. My first drink, you know, I was a junior in high school. All my friends had been doing it for a while. You know, I always said I was a late bloomer. I couldn't tie my shoes until the third grade. So I finally got a hold of my hands on some booze. It was a rum and coke. Also drank some screwdrivers, orange juice. Doesn't taste so good coming on the way back up. Yeah, I blacked out, threw up, kept drinking. And that was like my drinking career. I was a throw-up king. You know, I could throw up into a red cup. I could turn around, throw up, and just keep drinking like it was no big deal. And the thing is like once I started drinking that night, something switched on, and I needed more booze. Like I just needed to drink more. And my friends were like okay, and they were cool. They were going to sleep. And me, I wanted to keep drinking. I just wanted to drink. And you know, I was like searching everywhere for booze. I was like looking in the bushes. I was looking in the jacuzzi cupboard. I was looking up in the trees, just like frantically needing booze. And then I finally went to the kitchen and it was there in the liquor cabinet and poured myself a drink, you know, and I crawled into bed and I was hiding it from my friends. I didn't want them to know that I was, you know, taking some on the side or that I was drinking longer than they were. I was just keeping it on the down low. And, you know, I got in the car that morning. My mom asked how it was. You know, I didn't sleep that night because I was drunk and I was like, it was awesome. Best time of my life. I want to do it again. And a few months later, I had a chance to do it, you know, and it was like a prom or a formal or something like that, and my friend was taking me home, and the same thing, right? There was booze there. I drank it all right away, you know, 10 shots to the face, because I thought, oh, there's not going to be enough time. I got to get drunk right now, right here. And that night, he's taking me home, and I'm leaving my head outside the window. I told him, I need fresh air. You know, the next morning, his dad was like, hey, were you guys drinking? And he goes, no, we weren't drinking. And he goes, what's this? All along the side of the car, there's just pink, vile, like, vomit. You know, I had no idea. I was throwing up. I thought I was just getting fresh air. And I wasn't in control when I was drinking. I didn't know who was going to come out. You know, was it the nice guy that was going to give you a hug? Or was it the guy that was going to swing a fire hydrant at you, telling you he loved you? And I did that. I did that to friends. I would take a fire hydrant and swing it and just be violent for no reason. I wasn't a violent person. But I turned into something else once I started drinking. You know, high school, like I said, it was really fun. I did well in school. I was a talented swimmer. I went to a prestigious school back east. I thought, okay, like in Bill's story, right? I'd arrived. I'm going to go to this school. I'm going to get my degree. I'm going to put my big boy pants on, and I'm going to show the world that I'm something special. And I get back there, and I put down all the outside issues. I was just going to drink. I was just going to drink, and that's what I was going to do. And apparently your body doesn't do well when you're standing up playing cards every night until 2 a.m., you know, 3 a.m., and you got to get up the next morning at like 4:30 to go to practice. Your shoulder hurts for some reason, you know. It's like not working right. And I just, coach, I don't understand, you know. I'm doing everything I used to do, you know, except for sleep. And I was drinking 5-6 nights a week, and always with a different person, you know. So I thought, oh, okay, I'm in control. And but the thing is like once I started, that's what I loved. I didn't have an off switch. You know, at the time, I didn't know it was an allergy. I did not know I had a physical allergy to alcohol. I did not know that my body, like, responded differently to alcohol. When it gets inside my body, my liver, like, reacts differently. Did not know. All I knew is that I could take 18 shots of vodka in a row and walk around and then start drinking, like, start partying. And I was 140 pounds at the time, you know, 6 feet. That's another thing I discovered in Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't matter how much I drank, or, you know, it was every day or continuous, or how much I drank that night. It's just I know that, like, once I started to drink, I had little to no control of, like, what was going to happen whatsoever. Because physical allergy kicks in. Didn't kick in all the time, but most times for me it did. And like I said, I'd throw up, keep drinking, black out, wake up the next morning, no hangover. I thought it was a blessing, right? I didn't know it. I did not feel like shit in the morning. I felt like I was ready to go. And I could just take on the world. And lo and behold, you know, 2 semesters go by. School says, hey, you can't live on campus anymore. You're a danger to yourself and danger to others. You need to move off campus. So I took a medical leave of absence. I thought it was voluntary. I told everyone it was voluntary. But basically, they were saying, get your ass out of here. And so I went to a rehab. And I was 18 years old. It was based on, like, the fundamentals of Scientology. They had us read a lot of heady books about, you know, confront, control, and communicate your problem, and you can do this. And I was like, oh, right, I can do this. I don't ever have to drink again. I'm in control. And, you know, I did all this 3-month program. I thought I knew. I thought I knew how my mind worked. I thought I knew how other people's minds worked, and I was going to do this thing. And I get out, and, you know, I'm working part-time jobs here, part-time jobs there, finally find some full-time work, and taking a break from school. And suddenly it's like a good idea. 3 months go by, it's a good idea to start drinking again. Well, these bright people used to do it, right? That's how people are smart. They read these big books, and they drank a lot. Like, that's what I wanted to be, was smart, because I felt like I wasn't smart enough for college, and I just wasn't good enough to these, compared to these people who are really smart and read all these fancy people. So I'll drink, and I'll read these big books that I can't pronounce, and then that'll be my solution. Like, that's how I will control my drinking, by reading books by authors whose names I can't pronounce. That's fucking insane, if you don't mind me saying. Like, that doesn't make any sense, but at the time, it did. And like, that just progressed. It just progressed to the point where I didn't need an excuse to drink. I didn't really care about controlling it. I just wanted to look good, you know, to my parents, to the doctors, to the school that I was, like, okay to attend there. I wasn't going to endanger anyone. And, you know, so 1.5 years goes by, a lot of close calls, doing the same old shit, running around with the same old people. And I go back east to the school, and it's like, all right, I'm going to do it right this time. I'm smart. I've read these books. I'm going to take school seriously. I'm going to put down the drink. I got school. I want to finish this. This is important to me. I don't want to hurt anyone. I don't want to let down my mom and dad, because, I mean, they were hurt last time that I had to come home and with my tail tucked. And, you know, just living in a small town, Selma, story spread. And I was that guy. Don't want to be like him. And, you know, the fallen golden child or whatever. And so I get back there. It was like a week before I started drinking. And, you know, like it talks about in the book, you know, the robe came out, carpet slippers came out, and it was on. And 3 months later, I wind up in a mental hospital. apparently, like, they frown upon you running down the halls naked, screaming, "I am Ahab." Like, that's not okay. Not okay. Talking real fast, you know, and was scaring people, you know. My family was over, and I just, like, stripped down naked, and because I wanted to be comfortable in my body, right? It's not my fault. This girl asked me to do a modeling shoot, so I had to be comfortable in my naked body. And why couldn't they understand that, you know? And friend punches me, I fall on the ground, like, got right back up, ran down the halls. And I wound up in the mental hospital. I wasn't crazy, though. I just had a little too much to drink. It's not my fault, victim of an unfortunate circumstance. And I remember the people at this place, and those people were crazy. Not me, just got in a little bit of trouble, said the wrong thing, should have kept my clothes on. Not my fault. And, you know, so they let me take my finals at home. I was like, good, I didn't waste the whole semester. That's good. I went home. I got healthy, you know, started seeing doctors, started doing that thing. And I was very against it, but I was like, well, maybe that's my problem, right? Maybe I have these mental health, emotional issues. And so I get healthy again. I start working. I start swimming. I'm competing. I'm in the best shape of my life. And I go back east and we're on a preseason trip. And I swim, and, you know, all the swimmers are kind of hesitant. They don't want to see me drinking. They've seen it. I'm like, oh, it's okay, guys. It's okay. It's okay. And we're in New York. New York freaks me out. Big buildings, concrete, very scary place to me. I like my valley, you know, green to the horizon. And I black out, and I just start screaming violently. I go psychotic, and I'm screaming, yelling at people, swinging at them, and just totally scared people. And I wake up the next morning, and I realize I have no idea what happened. And the thing is, like, they were telling me, like, what happened. I heard these screams, and I knew they were mine, but, like, they were so distant. And I knew I messed up again. I had the whole structure built up to be successful, and to just, all I had to do was show up and not drink, and it just came crumbling down. And, you know, of course, I started lying to cover up my tracks, and it was just a mess, you know. It didn't get any better. I lasted 6 weeks on campus before the school did the same thing. You got to leave. Your liability to yourself and to others. You can either get off campus or you can go home. So I went home and I just started doing the same old shit, and I found poetry, right? I found, like, this is my solution. If I just write and make money, that's where it's at. Now I'm gonna be a rock star poet. Like, that is my thing. And maybe I'll, like, get in a band. I don't know. I don't understand music, but I'm, like, getting a band and, like, rock and roll. Like, that's it. And so I stay up writing these shitty poems all the time for, like, 6 months straight, and they are awful. They are, like, really, really, really bad, and I thought they were awesome. And no one in my family understood. None of my friends understood. I was, like, on this vision, this quest to, like, just write the best poems ever. And my head was just so big, and I just had no idea, you know, well, how my actions are affecting anyone at this point. I'm scaring my family. I'm driving my brothers around drunk. You know, I'm just using everyone. And, you know, my parents are paying for everything. But I'm writing these poems, man. Just get off my back. And, you know, I thought I was so unique. I spelled poems P-O-M-E-S. P-O-M-E-S, really. Like, that's how special my poems were. I had to spell it differently. And, my thing is, like, I think I'm better than you, but at the same time, I'm terrified that I'm less than you. Just terrified. Just, I do not want you to know who I am. Like, what if I can't actually write poems? Well, then who am I? Well, I got this booze, right? And at this time, I'm trying different drinks. You know, I'm trying the wine bottles, because that's, like, that's classy, right? And some people don't do things dangerous when they're drunk on wine. And, nope. Still swung at people, clothes still came off, still couldn't control it. You know, I mean, so I was like, vodka. Vodka's cool. I'll drink vodka in the morning, and then I'll bring out the hard shit later. That's good. That's a good plan. And, like, didn't work, you know? This stuff still couldn't make you throw up just as much as anything else, and it still got me drunk. And, you know, I tried the beer thing. I'll drink light beer. It's good for my figure. And, I just tried all these things to, like, control it during this time. I changed people. These people don't write poems. I can't drink with them, you know? These people over here, they're serious about, like, books. So I'll hang out with them. And I'm like, I wasn't really conscious of this, but, like, I look back and, like, these are the things that I'm doing to, like, make sense of my life and how I'm drinking and what's going on. And at this time, like, I'm blaming everyone for why I'm not back east being successful at this school, and, like, why I'm not doing well. And, you know, I can't look people in the eye because they're like, what are you doing here? What are you, you know, you're just bumming around. What are you doing? And I was just ashamed. But at the same time, I was like, well, you don't know. I got this plan. And so finally, you know, I started swimming again. Things were going really well. I had a full-time job. I was doing okay. And, like, you know, laid off the drink for a while. And then I, you know, I fell short of the Olympic trials, like, cut, like, this cut, right, that I've been shooting for. I fell short, and I was just like, fuck it. I'm done. I don't care. I don't care what happens. And then things just got really bad in 07 and 08. And it wasn't fun anymore. Like, I wasn't having fun. There was no party. I was drinking by myself, you know, in my car, out in the country, you know, in the closet, wherever I could just drink and just be alone. And just, there was no writing. There was no books. There was no music. I couldn't enjoy any of that. Like, it hurt to listen to music, partly because I thought they were singing about me, right? And I couldn't walk into a Starbucks because people were reading my brain. Like, thoughts were being, what I'm talking about. Like, thoughts were being broadcast, and, like, everyone knew what I was doing all the time, and I always thought the other shoe was going to drop. Like, the man was out to get me, and he was going to take me down. I'm just laughing now. I was in fucking pain. I was miserable, man. I was hurting. I could not look people in the eyes, and it wasn't because I was, you know, I'm fucked up. It was like they're going to kill me, right? Like, they are going to eat me. And I think 2007, you know, Christmas dinner with my folks, and I jump up on a chair saying my brother's going to eat my brain, screaming at the top of my lungs, totally ruined Christmas dinner. And I totally believed, like, that they were trying to kill me, like they were eating my brains, and they were my brains, and they couldn't have them, and I was pissed. I was scared. I really thought they were going to kill me, man, and I was, like, literally standing on a chair, like, crouched in fear, and, lo and behold, I wind up in another mental hospital, and, you know, it's time. This is my sixth, seventh time in one of these, or 5150, or in-house, or, you know, whatever, 3 days, 2 weeks. It's all, you know, another institution. And, you know, the irony of the situation is that I was a psych pre-med student, right, and one of the best undergraduate schools in the country. Here I am. I ain't going to know what abnormal psychology is. I'm going to figure out what's wrong with my brain. If I can diagnose it, it won't get me, right? I read a textbook. I know what's up. I'm taking a whole semester of psych pre-med classes. Like, I'm good. Didn't get to finish, but I took it. And, you know, this is going to help me. And with all those philosophy books, well, at this point, I just resigned myself. Like, I go to this place, you know, I party real hard the night before, but I get there this time, and something changes. I'm there, and, you know, obviously I'm still suffering, I'm still miserable. Like, I mean, it was at the point where cars would be coming down the road, and if there was one headlight, like, I thought they were out to get me, and they were warning me, and they were punishing me, and that's insane, right? That's just crazy. And so I get to this hospital, and, mental health facility, and I look around and I see these people and I'm like, that's me. Like, I am sick and broken like these people. There's no hope. They should just keep me in here locked up, padded, 3 meals a day in a cot, put me full of psych meds, and send me on my way. At least I can't hurt anyone. I can't drive around in blockouts. I can't drive around, you know, steal my parents' money, steal their pills, steal their, you know, money. Like, I can't hurt anyone. And I knew, like, there were times when I was drinking, I'd look at myself in the mirror, you know, and I'd see, like, I'm a cancer. Like, I'd see my face, you know, and I'd just be like, that's disgusting, and why would I do this? And an hour later, I'm drinking. And, because towards the end, like, the one thing I didn't want to think about, like, that's all I could think about when I'm drinking. I used to work, you know, oblivion, just brought out, and, like, it would just be there, just not, just spinning. So I get to this place, and, you know, I see there's an elderly, you know, Asian lady, and she's sitting there, and she'd sit in her chair, then she'd stand up, and she'd walk around, and then she'd sit back down. And she, you know, would just stand up, walk around, sit back down, and I was like, I'm just as messed up as her. Or the guy over here was telling me he's God, you know, like, I've been there, and, or this guy over here is, like, telling me he's a secret FBI agent. I'm like, shit, they're in here too, you know, and, And these people, I was like, I felt at home, though. You know, I didn't feel that cr- I was like, okay, all right, yeah, all right. This is normal. This is cool. I could do this. Just don't take me out of here. Sure enough, 3 weeks go by, you gotta leave. Wait, no, you don't understand. I don't belong out there. I belong in here. Lock me up. It's better that way. Just keep me numb. Trust me, it's better. And so, parents take me home. I've been to AA meetings here and there. You know, I've been to an outpatient rehab a year after this Scientology experiment. And, you know, did the thing. Never went to one single meeting. I said, it made me thirsty. I don't want to do that shit. Made me thirsty, made me want to drink. Why would I go to a place that makes me want to drink? Turns out, like, that's not what I did. I didn't want to go. I just didn't want to go. And you can't make me do something I don't want to do. I'm Bob. And I'm stubborn alcoholic that I am. And so, you know, they gave me a big book on my birthday and never opened it. Never read it. Never looked at it. Didn't think I had a problem. Wasn't even curious. You know, I have these other more important books and other more important things and people to be doing to read this stupid little blue book. It even fit in my pocket. I could take it wherever I wanted to go. And didn't care. So I get out this time, and I knew something had to be different. I knew, like, intuitively, the drinking and the outside issues, like, weren't really doing it. Didn't understand why, but I just knew that, like, really nothing there. And so I met a man in the room, and he had this twinkle in his eye. He was a giddy fuck. He had a twinkle in his eye, he had a beat to his step, he wore denim. He was just like Oki Buddha, right? Just like bald head, white hair, just like giddy. What is he so happy about, man? He's in an AA meeting, and he's whistling, and he's happy, and he's telling me that he's free. That's bullshit. He's on something. I want it. And, you know, and I talked to this man a few times. You know, and the only reason I ever went to AA was to get my grandparents off my back, or my parents off my back, or the doctors off my back. Whoever I was living with or trying to keep away at the time, like, I went to a meeting for that. And I remember actually telling my grandparents one Sunday, well, they don't have AA on this Sunday because it's Mother's Day. I actually believed that. Like, nope, no AA. Shut down. All of AA. Shut down. And, we could take the day off, you know. I fooled them. I got them good. And they didn't take me that day. And so, I'd seen this man a few times. Three times I'd not asked him, but told him, you're going to be my sponsor. You're the guy. And he said, okay, here's my number. And he called me. I call him right there. He saw that I'd called him. You know, that was part of the thing. Because a lot of times you write down, oh, I lost your number, right? So that's something I always do, like with sponsors, hey, call me right now. You know, that way I have it right there. There's none of this, oh, I don't know where it is. The dog ate it, you know, or whatever. You know, call them. He said, read the book. Call me back. Let me know what you think. Never opened the damn book those three times. But this last time, you know, beginning of 2009, I was like, I'll do whatever. So I read the book. You know, I underline it. He says, you know, have you felt like this? Has this happened to you? Can this program work for you? And, man, I read it, I underlined it, I highlighted it, I did the best that I could. You know, I'm really foggy here. I'm like really, really, really just a mess, foggy, right? I'm not drinking, not using, and I'm still like flashes of paranoia. You know, I'm totally sober or dry, and, you know, I'm hurting, and I'm miserable, and I'm more torn up than ever. And he says, okay, well, now that you read it, you just call me once a day. Doesn't matter what time it is, just call me once a day, tell me what's going on in your life. And literally couldn't even make a phone call a day. Couldn't do it. And I remember, you know, Kingsburg Fellowship gave me an opportunity as secretary. I was like 30, 60 days sober. And I was sitting there in a meeting, it was a Wednesday noon meeting, and I text him, hey, dude, sorry I haven't called you the last 3 days. I have chocolate in my phone. So I had, like, a chocolate in the speaker part, and, like, people couldn't hear me, so that's why I didn't call them. And, like, that made sense to me. Like, that was me being honest, why I couldn't call this man. And, you know, I saw him later that week, and he's like, look, dude, it's 2012. If you can't make a phone call to save your life, there's no way you're going to get through the rest of this stuff. And that line struck me. You know, I didn't know what the rest of the stuff was, but I knew. I was like, well, this asshole, I'll show him. I can make a phone call. And so he told me to call him two times a day, 9 o'clock, 9 a.m., 9 p.m. And I call like 9:30, you know, 8:35, you know, maybe miss the night call, call him the next day, you know, like 10. And literally all I'm doing at this time, I'm living at home, I'm taking one community college class, and I'm going to a psychologist appointment once a week and going to meetings. That's it. I couldn't even make a freaking phone call. And, like, that is how unmanageable my life was. And so it hit me. I was like, all right, what do I need to do? He said, well, you have two choices. You could jails, institutions, or death, or you could be happy, joyous, and free. And I was like, wait, what? Jails, institutions, or death, or happy, joyous, and free. And I was like, well, that sounds good. What do I have to do? And he says, you have to be honest. And open and willing, and I was like, well, that sounds good. Yeah, it can't be too hard. And this is a guy who's like 90 days into sobriety, takes his parents' car out for a spin because, well, my car didn't have gas. Like, and I didn't realize that I was stealing their car. Like, that's insane. They're letting me live there, and I just take it because I want it. I need it, right? And, like, that was honest to me in the beginning. And literally they had to back me up against the wall and say, look, there's tire tracks, it rained last night, we know you took the car. No, Nick did, he's 12, you know, Nick took it. No, Nick didn't take the car. And like, that's where honesty was for me in the beginning. And then I got serious, like I conceded, like I cannot so much as have one drink, I'm not in control. And I started looking back on my drinking. I couldn't pick and choose when I was going to drink. I couldn't pick and choose, like, okay, this night I'm not going to drink. I was drunk. And I didn't have really a reason for it. And I knew those two things, like I lost power of control, I lost power of choice. I knew I had the allergy. I knew I had a physical phenomenon of craving the booze. And once I started looking at that mental obsession, like, I just want to drink. I just want to be in control. I just want to have a good time. It's going to be different this time. Every time I picked up that bottle, it was like, somewhere in the back of my mind, it was like, it's going to be different. And anything I went at like that, whether it was a job or whether it was a relationship or whether it was with my family, I was like, it's going to be different this time. I wasn't doing anything different, but I just expected it to be different because I wanted it to be different. I was just obsessed. And, you know, I started going through the book, and it was like, why don't you choose your own conception of a higher power? And I came from a very religious background, and at 10 years old, I decided, you know, at 8 years old, I wanted to be brother of the Catholic Church. At 10 years old, I wanted to have nothing to do with God, and I wanted to be the emperor of China, right? Like, that's what I wanted to do. I was crazy even then. And so, God didn't exist, didn't matter, didn't care, too much suffering in the world, all this stuff is hooey. And so, and I'd only talked to God maybe once in that 14-year span, and it was when, you know, my friend died, and he was thrown from a car, he just graduated college, I was so pissed why God would take him and not me, I was a bum. And so this question, right, why don't you choose your own conception of a higher power, and I was God, and I was like, why, that doesn't, how does that even work? So I put together this list. I took some stuff from the Bible, which I didn't like at the time. I took some stuff from the Quran. I took some Buddhist. I took some Taoist. I took some anything that I could find my hands on. Just to make sure I had my bases covered of all these gods, right? Like, so I could get in. I'd be getting good with this guy. And the sponsor looked at me and was like, dude, you need to find something that makes sense to you. And he usually lets me flop in the wind a little bit, find my way. But this time he was just like, no, you need to make some, find something that makes sense to you, your heart. And so I had to go to that quiet, still place in my heart and like find a simple conception that I could begin turning my will, which is my actions, or my thoughts, and my life, which is my actions, over this power. And I found something, and it made sense, and it was infinite, and it couldn't run out, and I could connect with it. And like, progress started to be made, you know. I mean, the next semester I finished more classes, the next semester I finished more classes. At that time I'm like 260 pounds, right? I'm a big boy, and I've been really unhealthy, and you know, a friend of mine says, hey, why don't you come out and start swimming again? And I showed up one day, and I made a commitment, and then the next day, and the next day, I started with 100 jump ropes. And then a year later, like, I'm swimming lifetime best, and then 2 years later, like, 3 years later, I'm at the Open Water National Championships, I'm being 17th in the country, you know, and I never, ever, ever thought that would be possible, and I had a lot of help along the way, but it just started, it showed up that one day, I just had to show up and do 100 jump ropes that day. My heart rate was probably 290, I was sweating, I was just a big dude about to fall over, and my friend thought I was a liability, he almost asked me to leave, and that's how it started, you know, and then 2 months later, you know, I've lost some weight a little bit, and I'm in a meeting, and I wake up that morning, I'm praying, and I'm meditating, and I'm like, what do I have to do to take it to the next level? And, well, I have this intuition, I have this like, still voice, which I was told that, you know, the intuition never lies. Quiet, still voice in here never lies. Ego it's out to get me. It's always changing what's really going on. And his quiet, still voice said it's taken care of. And I didn't understand what that meant. Well, I show up at a meeting outside that night, talk to a guy. He never talked to him before. He comes up to me and goes, "Do you run?" And I started running. And, like, that's how things started happening. And, like, things started coming into place like that. Like, just little weird things like that where I just let go and, like, let things happen and let people be people. And, like, things just started happening. Things started falling into place. And opportunities started, like, opening up. You know, I had chances to coach little kids. And I've got to progress, like, through coaching. And I never, coaching was not something I was ever interested in. Could not stand it in high school because it was all about me, right? I'm the great athlete. Like, it's not about these little kids. And coaching has given me this, like, opportunity to, like, really carry out my work on the altruistic plane. You know, very much like sponsoring a new guy. I mean, just a little kid here, and I have experience of this sport and what I've been taught and how I've grown, and I get to pass it on. You know, it's not about big me, little you. It's about we're right here, and we're trying to get better. And that has taught me, like, so much. I've become a better athlete and a better person because of it. And, you know, so I'm going through this third step. I'm turning my will and my life over the care of this power. And I'm living at home at the time, so, like, I have a chance to kind of make a living again. And I'm going through this fourth step. And I didn't think I was an angry guy. I thought I was very afraid, but not angry. You know, 312 or 10 minutes later, holy shit, I'm one angry bastard, you know. And I was just mad at the lady, you know, at the checkout store. It was like, taking too damn long to write her check, you know. Come on, I'm trying to get out of here, you know. I was pissed, and that actually blocked me off from, like, the truth and peace. And I got to go through all these inventories. I did quite a few, some intellectual, but some they started just making that 18-inch trip down the chain of, like, what the truth was and what the lies that I was telling myself was. You know, I went through each column and got to find out, you know, why I was resentful, how it was affecting all these areas of my life, and then what was really going on, like, what my part was. And it slowly became less intellectual and a little more spiritual, you know, a little more in tune with what was going on. And, you know, today it's like, if I know that I'm irritable or I'm restless or I'm discontent, I'm just, like, blaming someone or I'm pissed off about something, it's not that person. It's not that situation. It's me and my attitude towards it. It's really me and my connection with my higher power. I'm like, if that's right, everything else is all right. Everything else is taken care of. And I know that, like, loneliness, like, fear, pity, those things are all of my, like, own making and have nothing to do with anyone else but me and my attitude. And if I'm going into a situation, like, looking, what can I get? What does someone here have to give me? And I didn't know that I was conscious of this, but, like, go see someone, whether they were going to praise me for being a good brother, right? That was a big thing for me. I wanted to look like I was a good brother and a good son. I was freaking stealing their medicine and stealing money. Like, I was not a good son and a good brother, but I wanted the world to see me like that. And if I'm going into a situation trying to get, I'm not going to feel good, and I'm probably going to hurt someone in the process. But if I'm going to give, whatever it is to give, maybe that person doesn't need anything, but if I at least go in there with that attitude to give, it's going to be all right. It's going to be taken care of, and I just feel free. I just feel light. You know, I recently had the chance to, like, start making amends to my folks, like, start making payments, start setting things right. You know, I've lived at home with them for the last 2 years, moving out next week. You know, last summer I actually really started becoming self-supporting, saving up, doing that. It's about a whole new level, you know, of, like, what it actually means to be accountable. And I've learned a lot about, like, just let my yes be yes and my no be no. You know, I don't have to, like, pretend to be something to someone. I could just, yeah, this is it, or I think this is how it goes, or I don't know. And I could just be cool with that. I don't have to, like, pretend to be something that I'm not. I could just be me, and I could let the other person be the other person. I don't have to manipulate them. I don't have to change them. I don't have to, like, force myself on them. And as soon as I start doing that, like, as soon as I start being full of self-will, and I'm holding on to something, like, I start to feel, like, tension, like, right in my neck, in my back, my shoulders. I just feel like I'm not in the moment, I'm not engaged, and I'm not present. And so much anymore, I don't get caught in the past. Like, that inventory and making some amends have, like, really released me from that playing that same old shit over and over and over in my head. And, like, now I tend to drift into the future. What is this going to be like? What is this going to be like? And it's cool. It's cool to daydream, but, like, there's times for that. And then there's other times where it's, like, there's times of daydream where I'm open, and there's other times where I'm, like, really forcing something, and kind of getting in tune with that, and has been awesome. You know, I mean, this program has taught me how to be honest, taught me how to be willing, taught me how to, like, just listen and sit with these emotions, you know, whether it's anger or sadness or loss or frustration. Like, I could just sit with them, not to change them, and then I could just ask them to go. You know, the inventory, like, really gave me a chance to, like, get clear on my core fears, like, see what they are, see what's going on, see what's driving these things, and then just let it go and direct my attention to someone I can help. And, you know, I remember when I first started, I was like, my brother would come to my room and was like, how can I help him? You know, I was like really serious about it. And, but now it's much more flowing and much freer. You know, I had a guy, the same guy that, got me running again. You know, he left the room 2 years ago and I was kind of working with him again, and he was over at my house a few times, and I'm pretty sure he stole $250 from my room. Pretty sure I was an idiot, just left it there in cash, laying around. I just got it that day. It's gone, right? It's gone. I don't think it's coming back. I don't know where this guy is. He's on the road. His sister kicked him out. And it's like, that's something before that would have sent me ballistic. And like today I know that like, God's money, it's okay. It turns out like the rent that I was going to be having to pay, a guy texted me today, he's like, hey, only pay this amount. And guess what that amount is? It's $250 less than I was supposed to pay this month. And I'm just like, that's weird. And is that a being up there arranging things? Is that just the universe? I don't know. But I do know that, like, I can connect with that power. I can connect with that presence. And I can be happy, joyous, and free any moment that, like, I align my will with it. And I don't ever have to drink again as long as I live by spiritual principles and, like, try to live on the altruistic plane. I'm not perfect, man. I don't float. You know, my ego still gets the best of me. I still, you know, want to just cut corners and say this is this way, but that's not really what's going on. And it's been really helpful to have, you know, sponsors really just called me. I'm like, he lets me flop around a lot, but to just someone to be accountable to, not only my own intuition, but just in other people where I could just be me and try to do the same for others, give people that space, and just be willing to grow. Like, that's the key thing for me, is just being willing to grow and let go of any expectations of how it should be. Because if you were to tell me 3-4 years, I was not supposed to live past 27. Like, I just celebrated my 27th birthday the other day. I was supposed to be dead. I was supposed to write the Great American Novel, right? Which I couldn't really write anything past 2 pages, but I was supposed to write a novel. And, you know, I'm here. I'm happy. I'm joyous. I'm free. I'm sober. My relationships and my family are awesome. I found it like a passion in coaching and training again. And I know training's not going to last forever. And maybe coaching will. Maybe it won't. But, it's been a hell of a ride, and I'm just really grateful to have shared that with you. Thank you.